So just something to think about as well when building super fans is like, think ahead, make sure you're not signing a deal just to sign a deal. Get the right solution in front of the right people so they're going to be happy in the future.
But I am the world's biggest super fan.
You're like a super fan.
Welcome to the Business Superfans Podcast. We will discuss how establishing business superfans from customers, employees, and business partners can elevate your success exponentially. Learn why these advocates are a key factor to achieving excellence in the world of commerce. This is the Business Superfans Podcast with your host, Freddie D.
Ready!
Hey, super fans, superstar, Freddie D here. In this episode 166, we're joined by Jason Brill, founder of Parable Associates, a data service firm that helps healthcare practices finally make sense of the scattered, siloed data that slows growth and hides opportunities. Jason tackles a challenge almost every service-based healthcare organization faces, drowning in reports, tools, and numbers, yet still lacking the clear insights needed to improve operations and profitability. With a career in healthcare dating back to 2008 and consulting experience spanning major hospital systems, billing agencies, large practices, and private equity groups, Jason has become the data department practices wish they had. His team builds dashboards, automates reporting, and uncovers efficiency gains that directly move the needle. If you ever felt buried in data but starved for clarity, this conversation shows you the way forward. Welcome, Jason, to the Business Superfans Podcast. Great conversation that we had before we started recording. Welcome to the show.
Just chalk it up to great people from the great state of Michigan, America's high five. Great meeting you, Freddie. Glad to be on the show.
We had a good talk about some of the things that you guys are doing. I know that your background, you spent a lot of time early days in Tucson. How did you go from there working with the company you're working with? What's the story? How did that pivot take place?
Well, the story of me being in Tucson, that was a completely different industry. So I was an intern at Raytheon in the missile systems division. The role I had there did apply to my career in starting my own business in analytics. I was a supply chain finance intern, and it was my job to build some exceptional Excel-based tools. We looked at supplier managed inventory and the cost of doing something internal compared to using a third-party vendor, and we ran it through this fancy calculator. And we paid homage to my alma mater, Michigan State. We called it the Spartan SMI tool. We worked on building that. What I had learned was I loved using Excel. I loved building a solution with a tool that some people may look at and say, oh, it's just a spreadsheet. It's just numbers on a page. It's good for a P&L. And it's so much more than that when you start applying different macros or other technical things to it. So I got into that technical space, but I was a finance major. Fast forward into when I got my first job, it was in a healthcare consulting environment. That was in 2008 when I first got my foray into healthcare. I was flying all over the country and I quickly became the Excel guru expert. Patient claims data, claims processing, denial data, all these things it takes to manage the finance and revenue cycle of a hospital. I transitioned that into learning SQL and database management. And I did business intelligence development. Ultimately, I said, how can I use these BI tools similar to Excel? How can I use this tool to solve a real world problem? Now I focused all my energy on doing just that, taking these tools and solving problems in specialty care practices. So like your dermatologist, your podiatrist, groups that typically don't have quite the same amount of attention from big providers. They're on the hospital side. They're looking at the inpatient care type of world. But these specialty providers, really, they got a lot of unique issues and challenges to solve. And so my goal is to help solve them for that group.
Jason, a lot of people look at Excel as just I can create some nice little charts and stuff like that. The depth that it brings and the complexity of things that you can create with that platform, it's amazing because
We had a company about 10 years ago, and we had a guy that we brought on as our COO. And that was his background, creating stuff in Excel. He came up with some amazing formulas and things that gave us the data for the business that we were in at the time. I never even thought that stuff was possible. For him, he was just a kid in Excel. Sounds like you had the same background as he thrived on all that stuff. But it's important because data is everything in today's world.
Data is everything. It's so important. I was listening to, I don't know if you know of the guy, Mr. Beast, this YouTuber, like one of the most popular ones in the country. He's in his 20s still. You'd be shocked at how big he's grown his business. I was listening to an interview about how he grew his business. He talked about how he would just post thumbnails on YouTube and change them throughout the day. And he would monitor the analytics. He'd monitor how many people are clicking on it. How long are they staying on the video? What point are they dropping? Intense focus on analytics to grow. He was doing that at a point where nobody else was. I think we're in the same instance right now in healthcare, where we're bombarded with claims processing information, clinical diagnosis codes, standard procedure codes. There's just operational metrics all over the place, clock in, clock out. You have full-time providers, part-time. You got so much data, and the best practices, the things that they're doing is they're actually figuring out how do we improve the patient care experience using this data in a strategic way? How do we improve the financial positioning of the practice by using it in a unique way? Now with AI tools, how do I make it where I'm having a conversation with my data? If you have data, if you're doing these things and you start getting to a point where you have access to information, as a business leader, you're so much more comfortable and confident in the decisions you're making. You're just flying through what would normally take somebody like a month of indecisiveness, figuring out a problem. You're flying through it. When do I need to add a new provider? Do I have enough patients to actually grow my practice? What location should I expand to? Imagine you knew the type of economics by zip code and how many practices were already there of the same or similar specialty. If you have all this data at your fingertips, it makes it really clear. We need to expand right here. Just fantastic solution when you start using these tools in a unique way.
It's a complete game changer because you're no longer winging it and going by gut. You're actually going through real data has given you the insight and the intel of being able to make the strategic decisions. The reality is, I've said this before in the shows, there's three types of people. Those that make things happen, and so you're one of those people, you're making things happen. And the agencies that utilize these tools, then there's the next group that are watching things happen. Well, in the meantime, the first group is going miles ahead. The other guys are on the sidelines watching what's going on. And you got the third group that goes, what's the word I want to use? What the muck is going on? Because they have no clue what took place. Yeah. And they're clueless. And they go, what the heck happened? They're outside and the world is left. And their competition has crushed them of the tools that they're being available in today's world. If you don't harness them, you're not even in the game.
I'll give you a practical way of just in my own business, not necessarily specific to healthcare. I started to kind of drink my own Kool-Aid and I was like, man, as a small business, I still need better analytics. I can't just be winging it. I founded Parable in 2018. You do have to start finding yourself with your analytics and so on. I started looking at the revenue I was generating per account and how much I was paying for my staff. And I started doing these basically at a project or client level. It provided a lot of clarity to me that I can't bring in the best talent possible given the rates that I had. I built a lot of the business as an early solo founder that would accommodate my own income, but wouldn't necessarily pay for adding staff or building a true business or overhead. Just by going through the profitability at a project level was really insightful. Now we're layering in things like lifetime value of a customer. And we're comparing that to client acquisition costs. I'm stair-stepping into all these different analytics for my business. Size-wise, we're at 45 FTEs right now. So we went from myself alone in a closet in 2018 to a decent-sized business at this point and growing. I'm very strategic around utilizing the data. I started with something that I could manage, I could measure, which was that profitability. Now I'm looking at, okay, well, I don't really have a lot of churn, so that's great. So now my lifetime value of a client, now I have that. I can look at the lifetime margin, which is critical. And now it tells me, Jason, you can actually pull the lever and ramp up harder on advertising and marketing. Because if you land an account, you're good for a while. You got some runway. I didn't look at it that way. I was just trying to survive every single day as a small business. the more I step back and look at the data, the more clarity I have around, like, I am actually okay to spend money on marketing because I'll make it back. There's an ROI to it.
Let's take a quick pause to thank our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by our friends at Ninja Prospecting, the outreach team that makes cold connections feel warm. Here's the deal. Most service business owners are drowning in spammy DMs and cookie-cutter LinkedIn messages that never get a response. Sound familiar? Ninja Prospecting flips that script. They craft human-first outreach that actually sounds like you, and more importantly, gets results. No bots, no fluff, just real conversations that open doors. If you want to stop wasting time on dead-end messages and start filling your pipeline with qualified leads, talk to my friend Adam Packard and his team. Head over to ninjaprospecting.com to schedule a chat today, and be sure to mention you heard about it right here on the Business Superfans, the Service Provider's Edge. And hey, if you're the kind of person who likes to get started right away, you can join their free community at school.skool.com/ninja7704. It's packed with tips to maximize your connections and start making the right new ones. All right, let's get back to our conversation.
What you're doing is you got yourself, everybody starts out in the weeds because you got to do the work. You got to put it together. You got to get it rolling. And I want to reemphasize this for our listeners. I started looking at the data, and then that started giving you some better business decisions. When you brought on your first person, that freed you up to pay attention on some other things. And now you're more working on the business than actually working in the business. That gives you the luxury of being able to say, okay, let's take a look at this from a strategic standpoint. And you're not winging it. You're not reacting. Because you can say, okay, I've got the runway to pull the trigger on this thing, and I'm going to be okay because we've got the momentum and the finances to back that up. A lot of businesses don't do that. Unfortunately, we got cash in the bank. How much do we got? Oh, okay, we got this. We'll go. That's how it flies. You know it, and I know it.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, oh, man, we shouldn't have spent that because we got this other bill.
I mean, the data can provide clarity. The reality is, in a business, to the point of like how much money's in the bank, there is a certain pie chart, and you distribute how much of the budget you can go in each direction. That is a real thing you have to worry about. But if you have the information, not just have it, I think every business has way more data than they realize. But if you start utilizing it, aggregating that information and actually looking at it, you'll have more clarity over where does that last slice go. If there is anything left in the bank, hopefully there is, then where do I apply it that gives me the most leverage as a business to continue to grow? If you don't have anything left in the bank, you need to take a step back and figure out why. So it's just as important to take a step back and look at your data. Sure. Where is it going? I've been on both sides of that. I think every entrepreneur who's been in the game for a few years has played in both sides of, oh, I got a surplus, or I don't know where it's all going.
Or all of a sudden you go, where did it all go? You know, what happened? Yeah. So let's talk a little bit what it is that you guys do for the healthcare industry specifically.
We work with large specialty practices, like I had said earlier. Typically, it's anywhere from 20 to 200 providers. What I saw happening in the industry was there was a lot of roll-ups. Providers that were either retiring or planning to retire were deciding to give equity in their practice to another entity or larger entity. We saw this giant movement of all of a sudden somebody that was 20 providers in a partnership became 50, 60, 70 as they started this acquisition. A lot of it being regional, not all, but a lot of it. We work with podiatry groups, orthopedics, orthodontics, and dental. And we see it across the board in healthcare. As these acquisitions and these roll-ups of practices to a larger entity, a couple things take place. One is these practices are trying to consolidate the support, so the accounting services, the legal services, the payer contract management. So what rates do they get paid from Blue Cross and United and so on? Data analytics hasn't really been a huge part of that until it became like, I am logging into 5, 6, 7 different platforms. My accountant or my analysts are logging into all these platforms and I can't get all the data quickly. Every single practice has their own practice management software. And so they're logging into all these platforms. We said, okay, let's help them build a data warehouse. And so we use Microsoft Fabric. We've used Databricks, other platforms as well. But we see a lot of movement in that direction right now. We help them implement a data solution where we actually pipe data in from practice management. We can see all their patients, their claims, their family history for clinical decision-making, for financial decision-making operations. But we can also pull in their accounting data, their time entry for their employees to clock in, clock out, schedules. Now we have it in a warehouse. What makes us different, what gives us super fans, is we have been able to think about the problems they have in healthcare. Here's a quick example. In the urgent care space, I love the urgent care space, by the way. I think it's more like quick access, similar to primary care. There's different things there. I've heard this term on-demand care. I absolutely love it. And I think they should lean more into it. It's on-demand care. Before I got into the analytics side, it felt like it should be like an emergency department, but it's not. You can do some suturing and things like that, but it's not as comprehensive. One of the challenges is you don't know how much to staff because it's on-demand care. It's urgent care. We used all the data saying, here's the historical volumes from the past year. So now we see seasonality, cold and flu season are significantly higher. So plan on adding more staff, more nurses or nurse practitioners to your staff on a certain day or a certain month. We're able to help providers staff appropriately, look at clock in, clock out. We're using that historical data to drive these results. The list goes on of all the other solutions. In ophthalmology, we helped an organization know how many active patients they have. So when they wanted to add providers, they were able to add 6 providers and fill their schedules in 30 days. Brand new providers, didn't have a whole act, like no marketing campaigns like needed. They were able to move people around and fill their schedules, creating instant ROI, which is not normal to add a brand new provider fresh out of school and fill their schedule that quickly. We were able to help them make sure they had the right amount and knew how to move the patients around to accommodate filling that schedule.
What you're doing there, I'm going to repackage that a little bit, is that on-demand, urgent care / on-demand, I agree with you, it should be just on-demand. It's a much better name.
Yeah.
But because you leverage the statistics so that they would know how to staff, what you made is now the experience for the patient coming into that on-demand place is a much better experience because they're not waiting 3 days to go see somebody. They're getting in right away. They've got the proper staffing. So that location, people start becoming super fans of that location and start telling all their friends that, hey, you got something that's up. You got to go to this location because they got staff. You don't want to go down that place down the street because there's nobody there and you're going to wait for 3 days. You're helping that agency look like a rock star, create super fans of the patients that come to there. The agency is now looking at you as a super fan of what you're doing because you've helped transform that business. So it really is all intertwined. And that's some things I try to explain to people, that it's all tied together. The whole ecosystem is really tied together. And what you're doing is you're really the, I want to use the word glue in a sense, that helps make that happen.
Yeah.
Actually, more of
a compass. Absolutely.
You're more of a compass.
I'll tell you an analogy that I use. We'll stick with the urgent care, because in that setting, if you don't have enough staff, if you didn't plan appropriately, your waiting room times are going to go through the roof, and you actually get the opposite of that super fan. You get somebody who's going to just dog you on social media. I was been waiting forever. The waiting times are awful. Being as accurate as possible helps tremendously to reduce those waiting room times and that type of experience. It builds super fans and positive movement. What I do a lot of times is I use these stories and I say in our sales process, I'm like, look, you probably have really good people in your practice. You have people that are motivated clinically to do the right thing by the patient. You got front desk people that are willing to educate and help patients manage, like, oh, I don't understand my insurance card. I just don't even know what a copay coinsurance is. So you have people that are willing to help. You have really good people. The way that I view it is we're like the tools that James Bond uses to be more successful as a superhero, right? We're the utility belt for Batman. You have great people, but they're so much better when you give them the tools to be successful. We just happen to be one of those tools that can help your team become that superhero they are destined to be.
It's a complete game changer, because now the agency is, everybody's motivated, because now the team that's the front line, the receptionist that takes the person, registers them and all that stuff, their attitude is much better because they can do their job and have the data. And that transcends to the experience for the patient coming in versus them unprepared, not knowing what's going on. Even though they want to do good, they have no access to data. So it goes in the wrong direction very quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're talking about the registrars and so on being motivated and having the right tools. But another thing, if you're a business listening to this, or somebody and you're thinking like, I have all these tools, they're really great, but nobody's really utilizing it. I'll tell you one thing that's worked well for us to also build super fans when we're building a project. If you're a consultant or if you have a brand new solution coming in, chances are there's probably some detractors who are like, I could have told you this, or we could have built that. But if you start working with people throughout the process, what we do is we designate a subject matter expert. So when we're implementing these solutions, we actually have somebody who's well respected in that practice working with us. So as we build a dashboard, a report, as we create a KPI or key performance indicator, we have somebody who's part of that process. Yes, we're doing the coding, creating the visual, but they're essentially helping with the QA, the user acceptance testing. So when we deploy it, we instantly have a champion, somebody who's well respected within that practice on our client side. That's been critical for us in building super fans and getting adoption, having somebody in the practice say, oh, I actually worked with Parable to help build this out. I work with Jason and his team. I highly recommend finding that internal champion, not just in the sales process, but continue that forward into the actual deployment of whatever your service or solution to the client.
That's one of the things when I was selling manufacturing software years ago, one of the things that we talk about in the sales process, and we would get somebody to participate, is that this is the deal isn't the signing of the paperwork's not the deal. That's just the paperwork. Everything after that paperwork is the sale. That whole process, that whole onboarding process, that whole experience. And so I would, back in the day, I would set out the whole expectations and I would reverse engineer the sale. So we would work out and so I would talk about when you want to look at profitability, Jason. By profitability, you've made your money back. People are trained, they're operating, because you got to run two systems for a while. You got to run the existing stuff because you can't shut that off until you're building a new system and get that on board. So we'd lay it all out on the marker board. And based upon the timeline that you just laid out, Jason, we work together. You need to issue that PO like today.
We're going through an exact similar conversation right now with a prospective client who has some BI solutions. These solutions happen to be off-the-shelf solutions, like a standard SaaS tool, and it's just not flexible enough for them. They will have to keep it up and running. We're looking at ramping up some more custom enterprise-grade internal-based solutions. We mutually, in the sales process, came to the conclusion together that the customization, the speed, the ownership of having data warehouse on their side is the long-term solution. And so they were like, yes, we're sold on this. We're on board with this. It's like, okay, but here's what it takes. It's the side-by-side. So we're going through that process right now to model it out and the timing and the ROI, you know,
event. Once you get that done, it's over. Because everybody's bought into that plan. So everybody's got ownership into it. And it's much more successful. You can actually collapse the time on some of that stuff because now everybody's engaged and they know where they're going and you get a whole team effort onto it now.
And the other thing too is I genuinely believe it as well. I believe in what the proposal is. It wasn't like I was guiding them to an answer that I wanted. I wanted the answer for them to be the right answer because, to your point earlier, the sale isn't the paper signed. It's actually the execution of it in the long term because they're going to be that super fan. Hopefully they're going to be that big proponent and referral source. I don't ever want to get somebody into a deal that they regret. There's certain clients that we don't work with and we tell them we're probably not the best solution for you because of whatever the reason, size, budget, whatever it is. In that process, I'm thinking ahead to, are they going to absolutely be in love with the services that we're providing for the rate that we're providing it at? I think about that in advance. I genuinely believe in it. I 100% believe this is exactly the right solution from what I've seen in the past work well for others. So just something to think about as well when building super fans is like, think ahead, make sure you're not signing a deal just to sign a deal. Get the right solution in front of the right people so they're going to be happy in the future.
Once you get those customers onboarded the right way and they're actually seeing results and it's transforming their business, owners know owners, especially in the healthcare industry. And that can travel like wildfire, positively or negatively. It's important what you're doing and is really building that relationships with them, getting them to buy into the strategy, getting them to see the vision. It changes the whole game and you actually collapse the sales cycle.
I'm in the process right now of gathering information. I think this is your wheelhouse. But in that process, how do you incentivize a sales team to align the right level of service as compared to percent of top line, sell as much as you can, even if it's not the right fit? Any experience from your past on that?
Yeah, it's a great question. The mindset needs to be presenting the right tool. Don't try to upsell. The upsell will take place at the appropriate time. Get them going, getting them to see results. That's the first most important thing. There's times where in my past, I would sell into pretty large companies. Sometimes it wasn't the big ticket item they were looking for. I would sell the small ticket item, but I got in the door. Once you're in the door, you can grow. If you can't get in the door, it doesn't matter. I sold into this little company in Germany. We did a demonstration in a local facility, and they were impressed, but we had to go to Corp to get approval. I was in Scottsdale running global sales. So I flew back out to Germany. We're going to this little company to present the stuff. It's a $10,000 sale. So I've already burned up all the margin because of the two flights. We're making zero on this. We go through the presentation and the software crashes. And my guy is a tech guy and he loves the software and he's blazing through it. I could tell body language. People had glazed eyes. They were not getting it. It was lunchtime. And they basically invited us to lunch. I says, nope. I'm going to call corporate back in the U.S., find out what's going on. Found out we was a repeatable bug. So we became transparent and showed the software crash again. So show them there was a bug. We neutralized that. And I told my guy, start all over. And we're going to start the whole presentation all over from zero. And we're going to go slow. And we went through and started explaining it, making sure everybody understand. And the product was called CamWorks. And I coined the term machining intelligence before AI was cool. This was in 97, 98. We ended up getting the sale. And the little company was called Bosch. Okay. What that did, though, was then we were now able to, even though we made no money, we did the thing. But now I could go to all the suppliers and say, hey, Jason, I know you're doing work with Bosch. They just bought this product. You want to take a peek at it? And everybody says, oh, they're using it? Yeah, let's take a look. That was it. Sales just exploded. So back to your thing was, we did the right thing.
Right now, Parable is still in a founder-led sales position as a business. But I'm asking that because I agree with everything you're saying. If you go get into a business with the proper level of service, the proper licensing agreement, so on, whatever it is that you're doing, as that business grows, you can grow with them as that preferred partner solution. Potentially, as they grow and get more visibility, you can say, I work with that organization. There's bigger things to focus on. It's more about get in the door, stay in there, stay embedded in that business because there's the opportunities are, the long-term opportunities are better than the short-term. So as I build that position out or that team out, those are things that I'm actively thinking about right now.
Absolutely.
Build that culture.
The other thing I used to do back in the early 90s before 95 was I had a date, but I also had a brick phone. So I'm really dating myself here. I had a Mac and I used a CRM and I'd print out to all the customers. I would go do a presentation to a company up in Wisconsin or Chicago, Indiana. When we were done, I would say, okay, here's my day timer. And I'd open it up. Here's all my customers. You can flip through it. Bam, right on the conference table. Pick anyone and call them. I'd shut up. Badass move.
Yeah.
People would go through the book and they would go, oh, these guys are using your stuff? John? Yeah. They'd flip the next page. Those guys are using you too? I know Steve. They'd flip through the pages a couple of times and go, you know what? I'm good. I don't need to call anybody. What do we got to do to get this wrapped up? And the sale would be done because of the references that I had and the fact that I had a ballsy move to say, I'm confident. Yeah. Confidence is very important that they're all referenceable. Call any one of them.
We lean heavily into that same type of concept where specialty groups, they do network incredibly well. They have specialty-based organizations or groups in ophthalmology, podiatry, or dermatology. They have conferences and events, and that reputation is key. What I've noticed in sales is the easiest sale is the referral. Lean heavily into those relationships, lean heavily into building those super fans through different strategies, maintaining those relationships, because that actually lowers my cost of new client or new customer acquisition.
Sure.
Because I don't have to spend a crazy amount on paid ads on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn to get my next lead. I usually just have to figure out how am I connected to this new practice or this practice I haven't spoke with and going through and saying, oh, well, my existing customer or somebody I'm networked with, like there's an affiliation there that I can lean into.
It's sometimes you have to shut off the business part of you and actually become person, spend time having conversation with people. I mean, one of my biggest super fans was a shop in Rockford, Illinois. When the guy was going through a divorce, I went in on business to talk, and I could tell his demeanor was off. And he, what's up, Bob was his name. And he says, my wife filed for divorce, all stuff. Oh man, I'll take you out to lunch. Let's go have a beer or two. And I sat there and listened to what was going on. I flipped the business hat off and put the friend hat on. Those are things that you need to do to really build those relationships. And the other thing I tell people is recognize your customers and your key people on their birthdays. It's one of my other sayings, the little things are really the big things. And sending a birthday card to a customer, especially the decision maker, is huge because that's probably the only card that they got.
That's an easy one, and it's so true. I'm not even kidding right now. My team, they all appreciate me. They say the nicest things and so on. But this past year, they actually did forget me on my birthday. And we do a really good job on teams of like, hey, happy birthday. This is internal, not with clients, but like, happy birthday. Right. We send little gifts, like not gifts with a T, but gifts like the images in our team's account, funny things back and forth. Then I got skipped over because I'm not on somebody's calendar, right? Usually managers have their team member, right, but not in reverse. They're not going to do that this year, apparently. It's not me saying like, oh, you know, you skipped me, guy. I didn't say a thing. It was like a week later and people realized. Point is, I'm a business owner. I didn't get a card. So there's a lot of truth to that. You will differentiate yourself.
It's old school, but old school works. And people forget. They send a text message, an email. It's nice. But look, somebody sent me a card. Nice. The other happy half birthday. Where's it at? It's on my desk. Okay.
Yeah.
Bingo. Yeah. So that's how you change the game and create super fans. Super fans will stick with you through thick and thin. Yeah. Look at the Chicago Cubs.
Yeah, I'm a Tigers fan, but we're having a run right now. But there is a stint the past few years, 100%, in building those relationships. I was just recently having another conversation on that topic. Things I maybe would have done earlier in my career is invested more heavily into relationships. I was very heads down, produce the best work output, make the best Excel spreadsheet, make the best database. And all that did help me tremendously. But I did admittedly say, I'm going to work nights and weekends on database stuff. And I didn't go to the dinner. I didn't go to the social event. I was a workaholic and wanted to focus on that. I will tell you that those that did partake in those events are now executives of these large organizations. They made friends with some of the private equity groups that are then putting people in positions of leadership at these roll-ups. Everything worked out fine for me, but it would have been easier if I had spent the time and energy building those relationships even before I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur and start my own company. It would have really benefited me to build those because the people you are interacting with, even early in your 20s, generationally, they're going to grow into leadership positions. Somebody, build those relationships as many as you can, as many deep relationships as you can, maintain them, and it will help you tremendously. So I wish I had invested more. I'm doing it now, but I wish I had invested more in those types of things. The birthday cards, going out to lunch, those types of things are very doable and worth the investment of time.
It's small money, but the return is huge. You can't really put a dollar amount on the return because that goodwill just transcends to everybody.
Absolutely.
A great conversation, Jason, as we get closer to the end here. How can people find you?
The best place to find me and reach out, I'm very active on LinkedIn. So if you look for Jason Bryll on LinkedIn, B-R-Y-L-L, that's the best place to get a hold of me. I will personally respond to everything that comes through. And then the best place to schedule a meeting with our business is go to parableassociates.com. That's P-A-R-A-B-L-E, parableassociates.com, and fill out our contact form.
Make sure that that's in a show note. Great conversation. Definitely would love to have you back on the show down the road. Probably talk about this for at least another few hours.
There's so much we didn't cover when it comes to growing your business, building super fans, specific strategies. I would love to at some point reconnect.
Yeah, continue the conversation. Good conversation.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time.
What a powerful conversation with Jason Bryll. One of the biggest takeaways is this: clarity beats chaos every single time. Jason showed us that when a service-based business, especially in healthcare, stops drowning in disconnected reports and finally brings its data together, everything changes. Decisions get faster, teams perform better, growth becomes intentional instead of accidental, and that's exactly how you create an experience that turns patients, clients, and partners into true business superfans. And that's why this matters for you. Whether you're running a healthcare practice or any service-based business, the real advantage isn't just the tools you use. It's the confidence and leadership that come from finally seeing your business clearly. Jason reminded us that when you equip your people with the right insights, they become the superheroes your business was built to showcase. If you enjoyed today's conversation, make sure to hit subscribe so you don't miss future episodes. And if you're ready to stop just listening and start activating, join the Entrepreneur Prosperity Hub on School, completely free. The moment you join, you'll be surrounded by other service-based entrepreneurs who are leveling up their people, process, and profitability so they can finally step into true prosperity. Join us here at School, skool.com/eProsperityHub. And inside, you'll get access to conversations, tools, and weekly growth plays to help you shift from doing everything yourself to leading a business that works smoothly, predictably, and profitably. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm grateful you're here and part of the Business Superfans journey. Every listen, every action you take gets you one step closer to building your own superfans. Remember, one action, one stakeholder, one superfan closer to lasting prosperity.
We hope you took away some useful knowledge from today's episode of the Business Superfans Podcast. Join us on the next episode as we continue guiding you on your journey to achieve flourishing success in business.